as Cates versus Zeltic Aesthetics, Inc. All right, we'll hear first from Mr. Wasson.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'm Roy Wasson. I'm counsel for the appellate, Mr. Case here, and this is an appeal for the summary judgment for Zeltic, which makes its cool sculpting system, which is supposed to reduce your fat from the freezer. And instead of being here, it caused problems with Mr. Cates, called paradoxical hyperplasia, but it's fibrotic hyperplasia. It created nodules and scar tissue, so forth. And so, unfortunately, it means that the judge erroneously granted summary judgment on the failure to warn claim and the similar misrepresentation claims based upon the same fact.
Well, let me ask you about that.
It's a jury question on.
Let me ask you about that. You're saying that paradoxical hyperplasia, which is warned about in the documents for cool sculpting, is instead fibroplasia. But the documents that you're citing to are saying that the notion that fibrosis is the cause of observed PAH is speculative.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble here. I'm sorry, I have this thing that helps, supposed to help me here.
Sorry, my question, you are suggesting that the paradoxical hyperplasia, which was in the warnings for cool sculpting, is in fact a more serious disease, the fibroplasia. But the documents that you point to in the record say that the notion that fibrosis is the cause of observed PAH is speculative at this point.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear it.
The documents that you point to claim that this occurrence is actually more serious, the fibroplasia, the documents say that link is speculative.
Well, I don't believe that is an issue really in this appeal, Your Honor. I think that the issue here is not whether he had this condition or whether it resulted from this. I don't think that's an issue at all in this case. I don't recall that being something to a brief, so
counsel, just to sort of, I mean, you can correct me if I'm misunderstanding. I think what Judge Branch is asking you is, because your client is complaining he suffered this condition of fibroplasia as a result of cool sculpting, your concern is that the materials from the company did not adequately warn that fibroplasia could result from cool sculpting. Don't you need to show that fibroplasia can result from cool sculpting? Is that what you're asking?
Well, by the time we get to trial, we're certainly going to have to prove that. But here we never got to that stage because the judge threw us out and saying that the warning was legally sufficient as a matter of law. So the defendant never moved for summary judgment, saying that you have no evidence that cool sculpting cause is fibrotic hyperplasia. That's not an issue in this appeal.
Right. So the issue that the court ruled on was it said that the warning fairly and adequately and reasonably warned the nurse practitioner and the doctor, the supervising doctor, that your client's condition could result from pool sculpting. Isn't that right?
And let me show why that was legally incorrect, because the few references in the warnings and the training to paradoxical hyperplasia without the adipose in the middle, they're very few, but they have to be taken into consideration in the context of this was a whole buildup by the defendant of making the only side effect being paradoxical adipose hyperplasia. So by the time you see any references to just PH or the paradoxical hyperplasia, the mindset has already been created through many documents, and I'll go down through them. The multiple training materials were provided to Nurse Bucci and the clinic, the ideal image that referenced as a rare adverse side effect, cool sculpting as paradoxical adipose hyperplasia. The adipose, of course, refers to the fatty tissues, meaning that Nurse Bucci was warned of the possibility of a buildup of fat, which we believe is less serious and more easily treatable and so forth. And let's go down through some of the documents here. Nurse Bucci testified in her deposition about the training materials that she was shown when on page 107 in her deposition. She was shown a slide, and this is duplicated at page 5 of our reply brief. And I've been saving the comment that a picture is worth a thousand words. If you look at this picture, it specifically blows up the word adipose hyperplasia, and it specifically describes it as a buildup of the adipose, tissue, not fibrotic tissue. So she was shown that. On page 115 of her deposition, each person in the group training received a little booklet with all the information, and it has one nurse's station, which she agreed, quote, absolutely discussed the rare risks of paradoxical adipose hyperplasia. Page 123 to 134 of her deposition, she discusses the use of the cool sculpting adverse incident reporting quick reference. Cool sculpting provided the doctors with a form to use called the adverse incident reporting quick reference, which had a blank on there to report adipose, PAH, paradoxical adipose hyperplasia. It didn't have any other kind of hyperplasia in there, just plain paradoxical hyperplasia. They've known in the literature since 2014 that the paradoxical adipose hyperplasia was a concern. They received reports, and this is in the record, document 6207, that they received reports of symptoms consistent with the paradoxical adipose hyperplasia. Now, as far as the effect of the warning on the list, Dr. Shaw, the clinical director of this place, went, even if he was given some warning about just plain PH, paradoxical hyperplasia, without the adipose there, it didn't register with him because of all the adipose information he was given before. And this is reflected by his email in June of 2016, 2 years before the plaintiff's injury. Dr. Shaw wrote to Zeltec, and he said, I've heard of this case of paradoxical adipose hyperplasia. He calls it PH, paradoxical hyperplasia, in his email, but you know he's referencing, he's mingling that PH with PAH, because he goes on to say At our initial hearing in August 2015, we recall there was mention of a real but rare condition which potentially may occur. I believe it's called paradoxical adipose hyperplasia, parentheses PAH, which I'm now starting to hear about more recently. My understanding is that surgery and or liposuction is what would be needed to fix this complication. So by that time, they may have been starting to use the word PH or paradoxical hyperplasia without the adipose, but the groundwork had already been laid in the videos. I'm just going to cross over real quickly to the consumer expectations standard, which I meant to save for later, but you know, the fourth district case of Kavanaugh that says that that shouldn't really apply in a medical device case because the consumer doesn't develop an expectation. Well, in that case, that product was something that sucks liquid out during a surgical procedure that the customer never heard about. Here, our client saw the ad for the Cool Sculpting that on TV and developed an expectation as to that process. But there was so much reference to the PAH and paradoxical adipose hyperplasia that the jury could find that the warning without the E, just calling it paradoxical hyperplasia, would not be sufficient to alert even the learned intermediary.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wasson. And you've saved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you.
We'll hear from Ms. Pepke.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Honors. May I please the court? My name is Amy Pepke, and I represent Defendant Zeltiq Aesthetics today. We heard a little this morning, and mostly in the briefs, about theories on what paradoxical hyperplasia is or is not. And in essence, what plaintiff, at least in his briefing, is demanding that Zeltiq and this court define paradoxical hyperplasia as fibroplasia in every case, which is getting way ahead of the science, which has not, may never reach that conclusion.
But I mean, here he's alleging that he had a bowling ball sized mass that was hard and not just fat, it was woven into the tissue there, making it difficult to remove and requiring multiple surgeries. So, and he's saying that condition was not warned of adequately. And what would you point to show that it was?
Well, several things, Your Honor. We don't need to slap a label of fibroplasia on it to adequately warn. And Zeltiq's warnings to healthcare providers did describe the risk and the presentation of Mr. Kate's symptoms accurately over and over, specifically.
Can you point us to what?
Yes, Your Honor. In the sample consent form that they provided to all providers and to Dr. Shaw and Nurse Bucci.
What does it say there?
It says that it is a visibly enlarged tissue volume presenting as a firmer enlargement. So clearly different than regular fat tissue, the surrounding tissue. It occurs in the adipose tissue, that's in the PowerPoint.
But that's fat.
It does, but even if fibrosis occurs, it's in the adipose tissue, for which there is no evidence of spontaneous resolution. So they say that in the PowerPoint, again, that Mr. Wasson brought up.
What else does it say?
They also say that it is that surgical intervention may be required. So they repeatedly tell them that it is hard, it is firm, so it's not like regular adipose tissue. It's not going to spontaneously go away. If you want this to go away, it's going to require other surgery. And that's exactly what happened to Mr. Cates.
At one point, one of the warnings says something like liposuction or surgery, right? I mean, it doesn't want the warning say liposuction or surgery.
Yeah, there is a document that refers specifically. Yeah.
I mean, so that suggests that we're talking about that there's a fat problem and that that it, you know, it's not necessarily going to need to be resolved by surgery. It could be resolved by liposuction, which some might say is sort of a form of surgery, right? I mean, so, I mean, the point that he's making is this can't be resolved by liposuction. This isn't just fat. This is actually in the tissue, and it's hardened. And so what tells about that?
I think there is testimony in the record that, like, well, liposuction is considered surgery, first of all. Also, almost all of the incidents that I've reported indicate it can be resolved with liposuction.
And could Mr. Cates's issue have been resolved by liposuction only?
If you read the record, his actual medical records, yes, that's what they recommended, is that they believed it could be resolved with power-assisted liposuction. Of course, they also gave the warnings, though, that this isn't guaranteed, and you might have to come back in for this for additional surgery. But those surgeons, and that's in docket entry 17, 1, 2, and 3, those are the medical records, I believe. First of all, none of them diagnosed him with fibrosis. None of them. What they diagnosed him with is subcutaneous adipose tissue enlargement. That's their words from three different providers. There's no evidence that he has fibrosis in this case. So I just want to briefly say, you know, there are three different reasons to affirm the district court here. First of all, Zelpeak adequately described in its warnings the exact injury that plaintiff experienced as described by his own providers. Paradoxical hyperplasia, an enlargement of subcutaneous adipose tissue, firmer to the touch, that's how they describe it in his medical records, and none of them diagnosed fibrosis. Second, even under plaintiff's lowered causation standard, and this is very important, there is no evidence that his providers would have changed their prescribing behavior if given a different warning.
Let me ask you this. I mean, yes, we can affirm for any reason, but the district court didn't address this, right?
The district court did not. It was fully brief, but did not address it because they found the warnings to be accurate and clear here, describing the injury that plaintiff has actually had.
Right. Well, let me ask you something with respect to the warnings. You know, under Florida law, and I know the district court relied on the risk utility test instead of the consumer expectations test. But I wonder, you know, the law on that comes from, and obviously we have to follow Florida law on this, and it's not optional or whatever or interpretable. But I just like explore for me, if you will, for a moment. It seems to me that in 1981, when that was discussed, and in the context of that case, we're talking about use of a medical technique or device that, you know, wasn't being advertised directly to the patient. Probably the patient didn't even know what was being used. And here, we're talking about something, you know, there are brochures, there are television commercials, I hear it on the radio. You know, this stuff is advertised directly to the consumer. And I just wonder if you had any thoughts on why, even though we're not the ones who decide, but why it is that we should continue to use the risk utility test if we were the ones who were making the decision about that, which we're not.
Well,
as opposed to the consumer expectations test in the context where you have a product that is directly marketed to the consumer.
Sure. So in this case, I'm going to try to answer that exact question, but it blends because in this case, there actually is no allegation or evidence of a product design defect, and the risk utility test goes to a design defect. So we have a problem there, and we get back to warnings. The only defect they have is related to the warnings. So that takes us back to the learned intermediary doctrine. And really, that's where we find the answer to your question on the direct-to-consumer advertising. So Florida, there's no fuzz on this. Florida.
I agree. I'm just wondering.
Yeah. So Florida has, I'm getting to the direct-to-consumer. Okay. So Florida has absolutely adopted the learned intermediary doctrine, and they have not recognized any exceptions to that doctrine. They're very firm on that. There are other states that have.
I know. My question is, why shouldn't they?
So
it's obviously not something we're deciding.
I know. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
So actually, the Pringle case has a very, very nice discussion of why they shouldn't. The Pringle case, that's a Southern District of Florida case. And there's a nice quote from him. It says, regardless of advertising, prescription products are federally regulated products that are available to patients only through a learned intermediary. And for that reason, they will always be unique. So even if you have advertising that goes direct to consumer, you still have to go through a learned intermediary to be assessed, for them to exercise independent medical judgment, for which they are trained and licensed to do. And the fact that there are advertisements out there, don't break that chain. It has to go through a licensed medical professional. And here in this case, the plaintiff also asked this court to extend Aubin into recognizing another exception to the learned intermediary doctrine, which is that it was unreasonable to rely on these providers, on Nurse Bucci. And I just wanted to touch on that very clearly. The Florida Supreme Court has held in the E.R. Squibb case, Florida 1997, that it is absolutely reasonable to rely on a nurse who is working under the supervision of a physician. So that should put that to bed. However, this court also addressed the argument to extend Aubin when they addressed Salinero 2 years ago. In the Salinero case, that's 995 Federal 3rd 959, this court recognized that there is no indication Florida would extend exceptions to the learned intermediary doctrine, and refused to do so in that case in some very strong language, pointing out that Florida has never stepped its toe into exceptions to the learned intermediary doctrine. So going back to the actual adequacy of the warning, as the court pointed out in your questioning to plaintiff, the actual science, the scientific literature that the plaintiff points to don't reach the conclusion that they are urging this court and ZLT to make, which is paradoxical hyperplasia is fibroplasia in all instances. And that's simply not true. It's described as hypothetical, a theory. And what they attempt to do is wash these scientific literature through expert reports and an expert declaration. And that's simply not allowed. You can't wash things through an expert declaration and have the expert overreach the science. And this court has actually said in Evers versus General Motors and in Lucky Cap Management versus Miller Martin that a party may not avoid summary judgment solely on the basis of an expert's opinion that fails to provide specific facts from the records to support conclusory allegations. So they're overreaching. And so we set aside the label that they want us to put on it, this fibrosis that apparently happens with some, not all. Sometimes it is just adipose tissue that is seen in the path, you know, in the pathological slides. It's always in the adipose tissue. But Zeltik adequately described the physical manifestation, the risk and issue. And under Upjohn of the Florida Supreme Court, 1990, that's what they had to do. Is they had to warn of the injury to plaintiff, not the specific way in which it occurs. And they warned over and over, it would be a firm enlargement, firm, different from the surrounding tissue. So it's demarcated. It's different from the other adipose fat tissue around it. It has no evidence of spontaneous resolution. If you want it removed, it's going to require surgery. That is an adequate description of what Mr. Cates was told by his own providers. And also under Upjohn, Florida, 1990, there is no duty to warn of a degree, frequency, or length of the risk. In that case, the Florida Supreme Court said, where a defendant warns of the risk, it would be unreasonable to hold a defendant liable for not characterizing the risk as excessive, continuous, or prolonged. I think Upjohn actually addresses a lot of the arguments that we see in the briefs the plaintiff made about the inadequacy of the warnings. Upjohn should put that to rest. Regardless, plaintiff admits that if paradoxical hyperplasia occurs, even if it is fibroplasia, it presents as a firm enlargement different from the surrounding area that may require surgery. And Zeltique's communications describe those symptoms over and over and over. And the district court correctly found under Felix versus Hoffman that those warnings were adequate. I do want to, I know you said the district court didn't go to causation, but it's so clear in this case. There is a break in causation, and it's based on plaintiff's own evidence. I just want to touch on it in the little time I have left. Based on plaintiff's own evidence, the providers in his case did not pass any risk information on to him. So we have no, we can't reach an inference that if they had known about the label fibrosis, they
might. They did. I mean, there was an informed consent form that he signed.
So this is what he says about the informed consent form. It was brought to him after the procedure was already started. And in his deposition at docket entry 117-6, page 135, yes, they brought it to me after the procedure was started, but I didn't read it. I didn't bother to read it. I just signed it. That puts to rest, even setting aside that there's no evidence that Nurse Bucci or Dr. Shaw would have added in the fibrosia language in their risk discussions, which they didn't give. He sued them for that, by the way, and settled with them. His own evidence is those warnings never got to him. They never gave it to him. And when they gave him the consent form late, he didn't bother to read it. And under Florida law, Ashby Division versus Dobkin, 458 Southern 2nd, 335, where a plaintiff did not read the warning label, the failure to warn could not, as a matter of law, be the proximate cause of his injuries, full stop. Now, Your Honor, I see I have only a few seconds left. I think I've actually gone over.
You're over. Thank you, Bill.
My apologies. If you have further questions, then we ask that you affirm the District Court of Appeals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Papke. All right, Mr. Wasson. You have 5 minutes.
Addressing that last point first of the failure to read the consent form. But by that time, Mr. Cates had already been lulled into this false sense of what this situation was. That consent form.
Yeah, but doesn't that go to causation? I mean, the problem is the question here that we have to ask is whether the doctors would have gone ahead and done the procedure anyway, and or whether your client would have had the procedure anyway. And if your client's having it without even reviewing the informed consent, then what difference does it make what's in the informed consent?
Well, but he testified that had he been told, had he been given an instruction that he would have that pH was a growth of fibrous masses as opposed to adipose tissue, he would not have gone through the procedure. So there's three ways I say we can establish causation in a case like this. Either one, the doctor testifies I wouldn't have done the procedure. Two, the patient testifying I wouldn't have gone through the procedure. Or three, the doctor say, well, had I been given this proper warning, I would have changed my consultation with the patient.
Yes, but there are a couple of problems, right? Because under the first one, you first have to show evidence that one of the doctors testified or otherwise there was some evidence that the doctor wouldn't have gone forward with the procedure if the warning were what you wanted it to be. So maybe want to address where we would find that in the record. With respect to the second one, the place that he would get the information from is the doctor. And if the doctor would have gone forward anyway, and he wasn't insisting on receiving the informed consent, then how can he show that it would have made a difference?
Because aside from that consent form, the Zeltik had already misrepresented the actual warning and material that Mr. Cates did see, and the nurse Bucci did see, and so forth. And so this.
But then you have to show that nurse Bucci and or the doctor who was supervising her would not have offered the procedure.
No, I don't, because if the client, if the patient wouldn't have had the procedure, if nurse Bucci had told me this, I'd say stop, hold on, don't.
But nurse Bucci didn't tell your client anything until after the procedure had already started, and by then it was too late. So how can you say that the failure of the company to disclose the information would have resulted or did result in your clients having had this procedure that he otherwise wouldn't have had?
I think that by the time it got to that point, the misrepresentation had already gone to the point that Mr. Cates was deceived into believing one state of affairs, and it was not. And what was on that consent form, had he read it then, would not have told him anything any differently, because it just said PH.
But he never read it. So what difference does it make?
I'm sorry.
But he never read it anyway. So what difference does it make?
But it wouldn't have changed it, because it didn't say anything in there different from the misinformation that had already been given.
But then you need to show that the doctor and or the nurse would not have offered the procedure. I mean, there are two things you can show. You can show the doctor or the nurse would not have offered the procedure if they knew what you say they should have known. Or you can show that your client wouldn't have undergone the procedure if the doctor and or nurse told him about the problem. The problem is with the second one. I don't see how you can show that, because your client underwent the procedure without any information. As to the first one, you might be able to show that, but that's what I'm asking you. Where would we find that in the record?
Well, I believe that the case law says that the established causation, it's the totality of the circumstances test. And I will suggest to you that we do not need direct testimonial evidence as to I would not have gone through it, that the jury could find based upon the evidence that we have.
But what is the evidence that you're relying on for that?
Because
even if it's not direct testimonial, what are you pointing to for that?
Well, the characterization by Dr. Shaw when he wrote to explaining what he thought the incident was of PAH, paradoxical adipose hyperplasia, the jury could find that since he had misunderstood what the condition was, if he knew the true state of affairs, the totality of the circumstances, he would have foregone proceeding with the procedure. But let's go back to
where is that in the record that the doctor said that?
I didn't hear.
Where in the record could we find that? Where can you point us to the part of the record that says that, where the doctor said that?
I can't point to it in the next 3 seconds, Your Honor. I apologize.
That's okay.
I believe the record establishes our position. Ask that the court reverse and remand for trial.
All right. Thank you both very much. And we are in recess. Have a great weekend.